Today, did Goldilocks just blink? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. The Goldilocks zone is not too hot, not too cold, but just right. And that's one of the definitions that astronomers use to talk about the location of the Earth relative to other planets in our solar system, which supports life here. And I guess you could say the same about the economy. If it's too hot, inflation is going to arise. If it's too cold, then we could be seeing deflation ahead. So the question is, what is the latest data telling us about the state of the economy? Well, maybe Goldilocks did just blink because US stocks climbed on Friday, led by technology shares, after a tepid US monthly jobs report revealed investor concerns the Federal Reserve might rein in monetary stimulus soon. Job creation disappointed again in May, with non-farm payrolls up what normally would be considered a solid 559,000, but still short of the lofty expectations based on the Labor Department report. Payrolls were expected to increase by around 671,000, according to economists surveyed by Dow Jones. The unemployment rate fell to 5.8% from 6.1%, which is better than the estimate of 5.9%. An alternative measure of unemployment that includes discouraged workers and those holding part-time jobs for economic reasons edged lower to 10.2%. May's letdown came after April sharply undershot expectations, with the upwardly revised 278,000 still well short of the initial 1 million estimate that came with high hopes for an economy trying to shake loose its pandemic shackles. Markets were not disappointed by Friday's report, though. Stock market futures actually rose, with investors betting that the measured pace of job gains would keep the Federal Reserve from raising interest rates and tightening monetary policy. Economists have been a little overly optimistic about the pace of which we're moving here. It takes a while for people to get jobs, said Kathy Jones, head of fixed income at Charles Schwab. For the stock market, there's no reason for the Fed to move too quickly, and therefore that's also good news for the bond market. The employment-to-population ratio, which some Fed officials have cited as an important gauge of labour progress, inched higher to 58%, but remained well short of its pre-pandemic level of 61.1%. The labour force participation rate, another closely watched metric, edged lower to 61.6% as the size of the group fell by 53,000, with more than 100 million American workers remaining on the sidelines. Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester said the jobs report was positive, but still not enough to move the needle on policy. I view it as progress continues to be made on the labour front, which is very good news, but I'd like to see further progress. The jobs miss comes as employers widely cite a labour shortage as a critical factor in why more hiring is not happening. Some have attributed the situation to generous unemployment benefits as well as childcare issues and continuing fears about the coronavirus as obstacles to filling the 8 million vacant positions. The services industry took the biggest hit from the pandemic lockdowns and continued to lead the job creation in May. Leisure and hospitality added 292,000 positions, with the bulk of 186,000 coming in restaurants and bars. Public and private education also saw the benefits of reopening, adding 144,000 across the board. Other gains came from healthcare and social assistance at 46,000, information at 29,000, manufacturing at 23,000, transportation and warehousing at 23,000, wholesale trade at 20,000, and professional and business services at 35,000. But construction lost 20,000 positions, while retail was also down 6,000. Diminishing COVID-19 cases and a continued brisk pace in vaccinations in the US have pushed elected leaders to relax restrictions put in place to halt the spread of the virus. The economy grew at 6.4% in the first quarter and is on track to accelerate to 10.3% in the second quarter, according to the latest reading from the Federal Reserve in Atlanta. But the US jobs level is still about 7 million shy of where it was pre-pandemic, a situation Fed officials repeatedly have cited as justification for keeping policy easy. This does fit with the same narrative that the market sees a decent number, a relatively solid rebound and strengthening economy, but one that it still allows the Fed to take it a little bit slower, said Yung-Yu Ma, chief investment strategist at BMO Wealth Management. The job market is tight, but I don't think we're close to full employment. One notable part of the report was an acceleration in wages gain, which rose 2% year over year from being just 0.4% up in April. Economists have largely been dismissive of average hourly earnings numbers for much of the post-pandemic period due to compositional factors where the bulk of hires come from higher earning positions. With the return of more hospitality workers, the numbers were more relevant and now indicative of rising wage pressures. Unemployment levels fell substantially across the racial groups, with blacks and Hispanics each seeing a 0.6 percentage point decline to 0.1% and 7.3% respectively. While this is not the million jobs per month that looked like the base case expectation for the late spring ahead of the April payrolls data, it isn't a disaster either, one analyst said. Average hourly earnings climbed 2%, stoking inflation fears somewhat as rising wages are unlikely to be reversed, but some suggested businesses could pass on rising costs to customers and consumers to mitigate wage pressure, keeping overall inflation in check. The tepid jobs report added credence to the Fed's stance to maintain its bond purchases until there was substantial progress on the economy. Powell's adjusted unemployment rate, which includes misclassified workers and labour force dropouts, declined by a more modest 0.2% to 9.1%. Presumably the final destination is 4%, which is the Fed's estimate of longer run unemployment, but we're only about one-fifth of the way towards that goal. Investors were concerned that a robust jobs report that pointed to rising inflation could prompt the Fed to pull back on stimulus put in place during the pandemic. It keeps pressure off the Fed and will enable them to keep their low interest rate policy in place longer and take more of a wait-and-see attitude, said Jack Albin, chief investment officer at Crescent Capital Management. The opportunity to keep rates low is good news for risk takers. And St. Louis U.S. Federal Reserve President James Bullard said the labor market might be worse than the current unemployment rate forecasts. With seemingly all systems go on the jobs front, the economy is flashing some real signs that this isn't just a comeback. Expansion mode could be on the horizon. Mike Lowengrant, Managing Director of Investment Strategy at E-Trade Financials, said. So what does that translate to? Likely more pressure on the Fed to make a move, perhaps sooner than many thought from the outset. Investors remain concerned that the price pressures will force the Fed to change the course of its current dovish monetary policy, although some officials repeatedly stated that any inflation will be transitory and the central bank will keep its current policy unchanged for a while. New York Fed President John Williams said on Thursday that the U.S. economic recovery from COVID-19 is far from the level at which the Fed might start to scale back its support for businesses, but added the central bank needs to start talking about a tapering of stimulus measures. Other officials have also joined Williams in reiterating the need to start tapering discussions. Now to the markets. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.52% to 34,756. The S&P 500 gained 0.88% on Friday to 4,229. And the Nasdaq Composite added 1.47% to 13,814. The best performers of the session on the Dow Jones were Salesforce.com, which rose 2.88% to trade at 237.48, and Microsoft, added 2.04% to end at 257.3, and also Intel was up 2.01% to 57.37. With the exception of Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, Alphabet and Facebook, which together make up about a quarter of the S&P 500 weighting, ended more than 1% higher. Energy stocks, meantime, were supported by rising oil prices amid expectations. Strong demand over the summer months will help offset the gradual increase in crude production from major oil producers next month. The financial sector overall was stronger, with the S&P 500 Financials Index up 0.18% to 637.75, and Goldman Sachs was up 0.7% to 391.45. The heavyweight S&P 500 tech sector was the best performing group on Friday, rising 1.9% as longer dated US Treasury yields fell. Tech and other growth stocks are seen as particularly vulnerable if inflation drives up bond yields and more heavily discounts the value of future cash flows. The Russell 1000 Growth Index gained 1.4% against a 0.4% rise for the counterpart Russell Value Index, as the financial sector, a key value group, lagged, rising just 0.2%. It's just a risk on trade because the market believes rates are going to stay lower for longer, said Robert Palvik, senior portfolio manager at Dakota Wealth. Overall, the S&P 500 is up 12.6% this year and near record high levels. The wild rise for so-called MEM stocks kept investors' attention, with AMC Entertainment Holdings falling 6.7% but rising over 80% for the week, and GameStop fell nearly 4% to 248.36. And next week, investors will be watching Washington for clues on whether an outside rally in shares of companies that could benefit from President Joe Biden's proposed $1.7 trillion infrastructure plan has more room to run. About 9.9 billion shares changed hands in the US exchanges, and that's below the 10.7 billion daily average over the last 20 sessions. And the volatility index was down 8.98% to 1642, and that's a new one-month low. Gold futures for August delivery was up 1.1% to 1,893, and crude oil rose 0.83% to hit 69.38. The euro US dollar was up 0.37% to 1.2169, and the US dollar futures index was down 0.42% to 90.11. So all three indices rose for the week, with the Nasdaq posting its third straight weekly gain. Now, over in London, the FTSE index was flat at 7,059, with the index looking at a weekly gain of around 0.5%. While the Stock Europe 600 and the DAX have managed record highs this week, the FTSE has failed to return to last month's highs above 7,100. The index slipped after slightly disappointing US jobs data that suggests widespread labour shortages, and travel shares were down again after the UK government removed Portugal from its quarantine-free travel list just weeks after reopening it to British tourists. The government cited concerns over rising cases and mutations of the virus. Shares of British Airways operator International Consolidated Airlines Group fell nearly 1%, with cut-rate airlines Wizz Air dropping more than 3% and Ryanair UK down 0.6%. And elsewhere, the UK announced a new £21 billion trade deal with Norway, Iceland and Liechtenstein. The deal will slash Norwegian tariffs on cheese, wine and spirits, pork, poultry and other goods. And there were hardly any gainers on the FTSE, with losses centred on the banks. NatWest was down 1.19% to 207.60, although Metro Bank was higher, up 0.64% to 109.70. Despite the economic uncertainties due to the pandemic, the UK housing market has remained robust over the past year. According to the Office for National Statistics, recent price increases may reflect a range of factors, including pent-up demand, some possible changes in housing preference since the pandemic, and a response to the changes made to property transaction taxes across the nation. Global real estate group Savills further highlighted that home prices grew by 2.1% in April. This was the strongest month-on-month increase since February 2004 and puts annual UK house price growth at 7.1%. House price growth is likely to reach double digits during the summer, and demand remains strong. But the supply of homes for sale has not kept up with the pace of demand. In fact, the demand for new homes across the UK is robust. At present, the government has a target of 300,000 new homes annually. On a final note, just as in the UK, the past year has also been a strong year for the US housing market, as we reported last weekend. At the close in Frankfurt, the DAX rose 0.39% to hit a new all-time high of 15,692. The best performers in the session on the DAX were Merck KGaA, which rose 2.04% to trade at 146.28 at the close. And meanwhile, Delivery Hero AG added 1.97% to end at 111.15. The worst performers of the session were Deutsche Bank, which fell 1.47% to trade at 12.36, and MTU Aero Engines, which declined 1.42% to end at 206.60. Asia-Pacific stocks were mostly down on Friday morning, ending the week on a down note. The release of positive US employment data raised concerns about a slowdown of central bank stimulus measures. Japan's Nikkei 225 fell 0.4% to 28,941. Household spending increased 0.1% month-on-month and 13% year-over-year in April, according to data released earlier on Friday. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index edged up 0.12%, while China's Shanghai Composite was down 0.21% to 3,951, and the US dollar yuan was also down 0.13% to 6.395. Jiri's Composite World Container Index increased 3.3% or $207 to 6,463 per 40-foot container this week, and remains 310% higher than a year ago. Freight rates on Shanghai-Rotterdam grew $288 to $10,462 for a 40-foot container, and those on Shanghai-New York surged $412 to come in at $7,559 for a 40-foot box. Likewise, rates on Shanghai-Genoa gained $238 to $9,900, and spot rates from Shanghai to Los Angeles increased $210 to $5,902, and rates on Rotterdam, New York inched up $50 to $3,720 for a 40-foot container. And Drury expects rates to remain on the higher side due to port congestion and equipment unavailability, so signals of inflationary pressures, but probably transitory in nature. Now turning to Bitcoin, the last 6 weeks have been among the worst in Bitcoin's history. Despite only being in existence for about 12 years, the world's most valuable digital currency has had its fair share of gloomy days and price swings. However, according to a new report from financial giant JP Morgan, Bitcoin's price, which has been plummeting in recent weeks, could fall even more before stabilizing. Since its inception over 12 years ago, the currency has been going through its roughest period. The asset eventually hit a peak of about $64,000 in mid-April. That's the highest point it's ever reached, albeit the world's most valuable digital currency by market cap has since declined by about $30,000 a unit. This is far worse than anything seen by Bitcoin in 2014 and 2018, 2 years that traders will remember for the asset's poor performance. JP Morgan's strategists wrote a research note saying that Bitcoin's price might fall further before stabilizing after a correction. It now seems unlikely that we see this volatility ratio returning to the 2x level of last summer. The best we can hope over the medium term is for this volatility ratio to partially revert from around 6x currently to around 4x by the end of the year. According to the note, Bitcoin, the world's largest cryptocurrency by market capitalization, has a medium-term fair value of around $24,000 to $36,000. And one of the reasons JP Morgan seems to think Bitcoin could fall further is because institutions have taken a break from buying the asset. So long as the currency continues to travel south, large-scale investors are looking to avoid it like the plague. There is little doubt, they said, that the boom and bust dynamics of the past weeks represent a setback to the institutional adoption of crypto markets, particularly Bitcoin and Ethereum. We note that the mere rise in volatility, especially relative to gold, is an impediment to further institutional adoption, as it reduces the attractiveness of digital gold versus traditional gold in institutional portfolios. And as the report said, JP Morgan thinks that volatility is likely to continue throughout 2021, and things could only marginally improve before the year is out. It seems unlikely, they said, that we will see this volatility ratio returning to the 2x level of last summer. The best we can hope for over the medium term is for this volatility ratio to partially revert from around 6x currently to around 4x by year end. And yet, Bloomberg's crypto outlook was much more bullish, saying on June the 2nd that breaching the upper end of the $30,000 to $40,000 range is likely for Bitcoin since its May swoon. And they believe Ethereum is on a higher beta bull market path. In fact, they said pairing the two seems increasingly necessary for crypto market participants, similar to how more investors hold Bitcoin and old world store of value gold. Speculative excesses have now been reduced, they said, and bullish fundamental drivers show some improvement. Dollar dominance is rising in a world going digital, as evidenced by Tether stepping up to the number three crypto asset. A focus on Bitcoin's energy consumption highlights the robustness of the world's largest decentralized network and shines on Ethereum, they said. Amid increased scrutiny, China's mining crackdowns are accelerating the migration towards renewable energy sources while elevating a Cold War of sorts that finds the US well ahead. About $40,000 may be the Bitcoin cap, a while within that we'll see a resting crypto asset bull market, they said. And number two, Ethereum, is rapidly moving towards the number one market cap status and has been a top driver of the Bloomberg Galaxy Crypto Index in 2021. Bitcoin is more likely to resume appreciating towards 100,000 resistance levels rather than sustaining below 20,000, they said. And the Bloomberg Galaxy Crypto Index signals a bull market at a discount to start in June, so we'll see. Bitcoin has corrected about 50% from its 2021 high and appears to be building a case around $30,000 US. This level is near last year's ending price and the 12-month moving average, up about 130% in 2021. Bitcoin and Ethereum, the majority of the index performance, comes from broader perceptions of the firstborn crypto as a global digital reserve asset, they said, plus accelerating digitalization of fintechs and the monetary system. Tether, the world's third ranked crypto by market cap, is a digital dollar and an Ethereum token. Ethereum, they say, is on track to surpass Bitcoin's market cap, emphasizing the benefits of diversification, notably in an asset class as nascent as cryptos. The trend that appears enduring is Ethereum gaining market share versus Bitcoin. Both have bullish underpinnings, but the foundation and use case of number two is a strong complement to the more macro store of value attributed to the number one, they said. Well, we'll see. I still think there's a lot more to play out with regard to crypto. And in fact, join us next Tuesday because I will be joined by Adam Stokes on my live show and we'll be exploring what goes beyond crypto and into some of those alternative finance models and even the concept of being your own bank. Now, gold bulls will have been scratching their head once again because for the umpteenth time, the yellow metal couldn't muster a second straight weekly close above $1,900 US on Friday, despite incessant noise about markets and about price pressures. A mixed US jobs picture did help activate gold's other quality, the safe haven status, helping it to crawl out of the near mid 1,800 levels it had tumbled to on Thursday. Yet both futures and the spot price of bullion stopped shy of attempting to return to the $1,900 berth that would have bolstered the confidence of gold longs going into the new week. In fact, gold tumbled from its $1,900 perch on Thursday after data showing weekly US employment claims to be the lowest since the outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic in mid-March 2020. The suggestion of a marked improvement in the labour market sent gold's rivals, US bond yields, and the dollar surging instead as COMEX futures tumbled to a Thursday low of 1,866, while spot gold touched around 1,965. With the consensus expecting an upside blowout jobs number, gold was set up for a fall, as it had proven to be susceptible to good economic news or anything that would encourage the Fed to tighten its ultra-accommodative monetary policy. Instead, we got a number that was disappointing when measured against expectations, and the metal rebounded in response. This sent gold back into rally mode, with the net result a rise of around $20 in gold and taking it closer towards 1,900, but not quite making it. But I think it shows that gold traders and investors more generally are very hungry for information relating to the upcoming monetary policy of the Federal Reserve. So they focus so intently on any fundamental event that could shift market perception and sentiment. They're boxing its shadows in a way. Information as to when the Federal Reserve will taper its quantitative easing program and raising interest rates has been laid out in a transparent measure by the Federal Reserve. And of course, it's released in those minutes and press conferences by the chairman following each FOMC meeting. However, because their mandate is data dependent, we know that at some point the Federal Reserve will begin to taper and will begin to raise their Fed fund rates. Put simply, the monetary policy of the Fed is a moving target and susceptible to vast restructuring as the economy rebounds. However, the incredible volatility from strong bearish to strong bullish in a 24-hour time frame is proof that traders and investors are ready at any moment to overreact, and sometimes too quickly, to economic reports as they are released. So let's come over to the local markets. At the close in Sydney, the S&P ASX 200 added 0.49% to hit a new all-time high. The best performers of the session on the 200 were ARB Corp, which rose 6.26% to trade at $45. That's a new high. Meanwhile, Origin Energy added 5.36% to end at 4.72. And Bendigo Bank was up 5.12% to 10.89. Now, the latest Roy Morgan employment estimates for May showed unemployment rising 1.3 percentage points to 10.3% after the end of the $89 billion JobKeeper wage subsidy program. The fall in underemployment, down 0.7 percentage points to 8.6%, meant overall labour underutilisation was up 0.6% to 18.9%, with 2.75 million Australians now unemployed or underemployed, and that's almost 600,000 more than the pre-COVID-19. Roy Morgan's unemployment figure of 10.3% for May is over 4 points higher than the current ABS estimate for April of 5.5%. However, remember the ABS figure for April counts as employed an additional 59,000 Australians who were working 0 hours for economic reasons. If these non-workers were added back, the ABS unemployment estimate for March would increase to 815,000 or 5.9%. The ABS also claims that there are nearly 1.1 million Australians, which is 7.8%, underemployed, giving a total of 1.9 million unemployed and underemployed, which is 13.8% of the workforce. In addition to those who are unemployed, 1.26 million Australians, or 8.6% of the workforce, were underemployed, working part-time but looking for more work, and that was a decrease of just 101,000 on April. In total, 2.75 million Australians, or 18.9% of the workforce, were either unemployed or underemployed in May, and that's an increase of 85,000 on April. The increase was driven by rising unemployment in May. Compared to early May 2020, before the nationwide lockdown was implemented in May 2021, there were nearly 600,000 more Australians either employed or underemployed, up 3.3 percentage points, even though overall employment at 30,069,000 is now higher than it was in pre-COVID levels at 12,913,000. Unemployment is now lowest in New South Wales and was down 1.9 percentage points to 7.9%. That's the only state to see a fall in the measure in May. In all other states, unemployment increased in line with the national results. Victoria had an unemployment rate of 8.5%, which was up 0.6 percentage points since April, and was also clearly under the national average, although the figure for May doesn't include the impact of the latest lockdowns, which is set to last at least 2 weeks. And between them, New South Wales and Victoria took the bulk of the $89 billion JobKeeper wage subsidy, with $30 billion, which is 33.8% of all funds handed to New South Wales, and $28.1 billion, or 31.7%, delivered to Victoria. This is no surprise given the two states comprise over 55% of the national economy, but even so, federal government's COVID-19 payments per capita has so far been highest in Victoria at $6,760 and New South Wales at $6,409. Queensland has had the third highest COVID-19 payments per capita at $5,787, but despite this, has the highest unemployment of any state at 15%, up 15.3 points from April. Unemployment increased in the smaller states in May and was up in Western Australia at 11.7%, up 3.7 percentage points, South Australia at 12%, up 2.2 percentage points, and Tasmania at 11.7%, up 1.7 percentage points. The driver of the increasing unemployment rates across these states was the fall in part-time employment, which fell in the four largest states of New South Wales, Victoria, Queensland, and Western Australia. In contrast, full-time employment increased in all five mainland states. So what about the future? Well, according to the AFR, investment strategists have ratcheted up their outlooks for Australian shares and now expect blue chips to soar beyond their record highs to deliver what could be one of the best years in decades. Strategists from JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley and Commonwealth Bank have all increased the levels they forecast for the ASX 200 to hit by the end of the calendar year as the index joins equity markets in the US and Europe to trade at record levels. At the high end of the estimates sits Van Eyck, the exchange-traded fund manager, which this week pushed its forecast for the benchmark to 8,000 points, which is 10% above the benchmark's record high reached on Friday. The new year target implies a 21.4% gain for 2021, which would mark the best year since 2009, when shares lurched back from the depths of the financial crisis and the second biggest annual return in the past two decades. Russell Chesler, head of investments and capital markets for Van Eyck, Australia, upgraded the company's year-end target on Wednesday after bumper first quarter gross domestic product growth data was released. GDP grew 1.8% in the March quarter, outpacing forecasts from economists, and is primed to grow 5% for the year, according to estimates from Van Eyck, adding lift to corporate profits. Robust growth in company earnings will support equity valuations, said Mr. Chesler. We expect economic growth to gain momentum over the remainder of 2021, being supported by a surge in Australia's terms of trade. On Wednesday, CommSec, Commonwealth Bank's brokerage, increased its target for the ASX 200 by 150 points to 7,350, ahead of Morgan Stanley's 7,200 rolling 12-month forecast, which the bank increased by 100 points last month. In May, JP Morgan also grew the level it believed the blue chip benchmark would reach this year by 500 points to 7,500 to reflect the rosy outlook for corporate earnings. The level predicted by JP Morgan implies a return of 11.6% for 2021. That would be the share market's second best year since 2013, trailing only the bumper gain in 2019 when Australian equities climbed nearly a fifth after retracing a painful end to the prior year. Robust profit forecasts for listed companies, particularly the big miners and Australia's banks, will juice the share market rally further, said Jason Steed, Chief Asia-Pacific Equity Analyst for JP Morgan. We've seen continued and fairly significant earnings upgrades across the sector, he said. The materials sector is the standout, with the iron ore price continuing to run at record levels. The price of iron ore has soared above $200 this year. A strong demand from China has squeezed supply in a boon to the likes of Australia's global miners, BHP, Rio Tinto and Fortescue, three of the world's top four iron ore suppliers. The rise in commodity prices have sent shares in each of the three companies to record highs this year, adding a powerful boost to some of the biggest companies on the Australian share market. Despite increasing its ASX 200 forecast, Chris Nicol, Morgan Stanley's Australian equity strategist, issues a warning though. A further rally in stock prices will make shares more expensive relative to corporate profits, causing a valuation stretch that threatens to cap near-term performance. We do see some price upside on a 12-month time horizon, however. The bulk of expected total return will fall to income as dividend profiles continue to be rebuilt post-COVID. The ASX 200 was up 0.49% to 7,295, a record high. The financial services index was up 1.31% to 6,661. And the real estate trusts was up 0.07% to 1,531. The local volatility index was up 12.73% to 1,343. The ASX 200 futures was up 0.52% to 7,305. ANZ was up 1.49% to 2,920. CBA was up 1.29% to 102.52. NAB was up 1.44% to 27.51. And Westpac was up 1.4% to 26.87. Bank of Queensland was up 1.01% to $9. And Bendigo Adelaide Bank was up 5.12% to 10.89. Suncorp was up 0.89% to 10.30. Macquarie was up 1.02% to $154. And AMP was up 2.68% to 1.15. Genworth was up 2.16% to 284. McGrath was down 0.86% to 57 cents. And Yellowbit Road ended at 9.1 cents. AFG was up 3.32% to 280. Mortgage Choice was at 194. And Afterpay Touch was down 0.81% to 94.48. Cymec was up 1.36% to 21.64. And the Aussie US dollar was up 1.08% to 77.37, while the Euro Aussie dollar was down 0.64% to 1.5719. The 2-year bond was down 7.27% to 0.051. 3-year bond was down 6.23% to 0.301, and the 10-year bond was down 4.2% to 1.573. The gold Aussie cross was up 0.03% to 2,443, and the Bitcoin Aussie cross was up 1.34% to 48,667. The increase to year-end targets reflects the robust run for the local share market, which ended the week with new highs to extend a sustained powerful run since the lows of March last year. The rising market and quickly expanding economy has increased the focus on inflation and whether central banks will move to rein in rising prices. The hot debate has split investors in two camps. One is worried that the likes of the Federal Reserve and the Reserve Bank of Australia will move too slowly to taper monetary stimulus. The other believes the increase in prices will be temporary. It's a very divided market on that front, said Mr. Steed. Inflation will play a big part in how the rest of the year transpires. I think that sums up quite well exactly where we are. I think that the inflation that we're seeing is transitory. And in fact, I discussed this with Damien Klassen in a show, a masterclass on inflation, which will be released very soon. And there will be a part two to follow that up. So we are in an interesting situation where there are conflicting signs and conflicting opinions as to how things will play out. The unknown quantity, of course, is the virus and the virus variants, which are continuing to wreak havoc in parts of the world, and even locally, of course, creating significant disruption in Melbourne. But more broadly, the question is, will the economy really come back, or will we be seeing short-term blips and short-term inflationary pressures, but essentially negative news on other fronts? And if that negative news keeps coming, then, of course, the central banks will just keep throwing more liquidity on the fire. it's a very interesting time, a very uncertain time. And so I've always believed this is a time to be cautious and to try and watch the data to interpret what may happen next. Because there is only uncertainty and not certainty. And to that end, maybe Goldilocks has indeed blinked. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.